Welcome, everybody. It's time for another installment of the OC Spotlight, where we take a look at the most amazing thought leaders right here in your own backyard doing the most incredible things. Today, we're privileged to have with us, well, I'm going to let them introduce themselves here because I'm not even sure I know how to explain what it is that they're doing over there. Let's let you guys identify yourself. Tom, we'll start with you here.
Hi, Paul. Thank you for having us on the show. Tom Pollock. I'm the CEO of Explore Ocean Newport Beach.
And what the heck is Explore Ocean Newport Beach? I've lived here for years. I never heard of this thing.
It's America's Experiential Ocean Literacy Center. It's a nonprofit. We've been around for 28 years. We changed our focus about a couple years ago, and to teach kids, K-12 kids, about the ocean from a perspective of science, technology, engineering, and math, with the idea to inspire them to get into college and stay in school.
Wow, that's quite a mission here. Now, you said experiential. What does that mean?
It's all hands-on. And Dr. Wendy Marshall, who's our director of education, can tell you all about that.
Okay, well, welcome, Dr. Wendy Marshall. Identify yourself here and tell us how you got into this crazy thing.
Thank you. And again, I echo Tom. Thanks for having us here today. Let's start a bit with experiential. One of our mantras at Explore Ocean is, you know, in order to be an explorer or have the habits of mind of an explorer, you truly have to get into the science. And so everything we do, there's, you know, we don't do demos. We let the students experience, dive in, roll up their sleeves, you know, everything from pouring water to powering underwater robots. That's kind of our philosophical approach as far as learning is concerned. But as far as, you know, what got me into this space, I have a 17-year background in education, and my focus really is, you know, curriculum in general, with an emphasis on science, and as Tom mentioned, really developing pathways for kids. So, you know, while we're teaching about the ocean and we're emphasizing science, technology, engineering, and math, we're also opening up educational and career pathways for students and really giving them, you know, greater view of the world, of themselves, and of the opportunities that they can have.
So you're teaching kids how to be an explorer starting right here at your facility. Is that kind of what you're doing?
Yeah, that's right. You know, we're down in Newport Beach on the Balboa Peninsula. We're fortunate to have a couple acres of land down there. And it's in an area that a lot of listeners in Orange County might know as the Fun Zone.
Yeah, people don't realize you own the Fun Zone.
The organization bought the property about 8-9 years ago. And this year we estimate we're going to serve 70,000 kids in our programs. Okay, so we've gone from what formerly was an organization that was dedicated to the history of the harbor, completely changed the mission statement over the last, you know, 2-3 years, and now we're serving kids from all walks of life, kids from, you know, Anaheim, Santa Ana, Garden Grove, Los Angeles, Riverside, you know, local kids in Newport Beach, Costa Mesa, all walks of life, and it's just really, really fun seeing the look on their faces. Many of these kids never been to the beach before ever in their life, and the first time is at Explore Ocean. Wendy knows about that.
Well, and I want to jump in a little bit. You know, we've kind of redefined the Fun Zone and what it means to have fun. We think it's really fun to be an explorer and to be an adventurer, and our location is just so unique. We couldn't do our work anywhere else. We ground ourselves in what's called the seven principles of ocean literacy, and we're studying everything from the earth sciences to life sciences to, you know, physical sciences, and then exploration in general. But what's special about where we are, we're on the peninsula. Most of our students, you know, we get these buses of kids who, first of all, just are so excited to be out of their zip code, but or out of their classrooms, perhaps. Right. But, you know, here they come, and, you know, some of them notice the beach. Some of them first, you know, notice the harbor, and they think that's the ocean. I mean, they've literally not been outside of their zip code. But, you know, we have the harbor, we have the, you know, the open ocean, we have the estuary, we take kids to the tide pools, we have the Catalina Flyer that takes kids to Catalina for us, and, you know, we have excursions out there studying, you know, native plants in their natural environment. So it's just such a unique location because we're able to do all of the teaching in a very authentic, real-world way. We don't have to hold up pictures or pull up a video. We just step outside and look.
All right, so I'm still trying to paint a picture in my head. I've been there, but I'd rather you paint the picture for the listeners here. What is it they see when they come to your facility?
First of all, there's a little bit of the Fun Zone was picked on purpose. And the reason is because we get 2 million people a year walking on across our property on the boardwalk. Right. So it has a huge amount of foot traffic.
And for those who haven't been to the Fun Zone, it's hard to imagine anybody hasn't been there, and it's been around forever. But there's all sort. There's rides, and there's concessions, and there's food, and there's all sorts of things that are fun to go do on this Balboa Peninsula. Right there in the middle of Newport Harbor, I guess.
Yeah, so we're in the heart of Orange County in terms of, you know, easy to get there from north or south. We have classrooms there. We have an ocean literacy center that's open 5 days a week. The kids come from all over the place to be there. We have classrooms for learning. We have labs. We have 3D printers, laser cutters, computers.
3D printers and laser cutters. What the heck are those doing in an ocean institute here?
Good question. Wendy?
I will take on that one. So, you know, kind of stepping back to what is it like to come to visit Explore Ocean?
Yeah.
You know, you drive down the peninsula, you know the ocean's on your right, the harbor's on your left. You get to Explore Ocean, and we have several learning spaces. And again, that's one of the things that's so special about where we are. We have a nice big courtyard where we can do, you know, the really messy, fun science where kids can really dig in. But beyond our courtyard, you know, our primary learning space is what we call our Ocean Literacy Center. It's there that kids can, you know, take a walk through the seven principles of ocean literacy.
All right, which are what? You've mentioned that a couple
so
times. Give us the seven principles.
I'll rattle them off quickly. So the first one is that there's one big ocean with many features. So here we're talking about the highest mountains and the deepest valleys are found in the water, you know, underwater, and which is really a surprise to most kids. The second one...
It was a surprise to me, and I'll tell you, recently they're still looking for that Malaysian airliner, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. If you're listening to this year, so now maybe they've found it. But as of this date, they still haven't found that plane. And they're talking about where the area in the Indian Ocean has these giant underwater mountains there.
Mm, absolutely. Well, and that's, again, you know, where we are. We're so fortunate. All we have to do is walk out on the pier and point to Catalina and then point to the, you know, the foothills, mountains behind us and ask kids, you know, well, what do you think happens in between? You know, when we ask them to sort of show us by hand, you know, what do you think it's like? They tend to start with, you know, it's flat. So they make their hand go across, in, you know, a flat line.
Right.
Well, by the time they're done, they start to realize there's a 2,500-foot depth between us and Catalina. I mean, it's pretty exciting. And that's just one small piece of the ocean.
So that is basically the tip of some kind of underwater mountain that's come up out of the ocean here.
Yeah, and so, you know, all of a sudden, you know, they're a little bit more interested in an understanding of this idea that there's, you know, one big ocean with many, many features and a lot to discover. The second ocean literacy principle is that the ocean shapes the land. And again, we are in a great position to teach this concept. We take the kids out on a harbor tour, and they're able to see, you know, weathering and erosion firsthand at Pirate's Cove. So, you know, we said the word pirate. I mean, that's already cool.
Everybody wants to go to Pirate's Cove. Yeah, right.
But, you know, now this vocabulary or these standards that they're tested on, they're actually seeing it in nature, and they participate in hands-on activities to sort of replicate how it happens. And it makes a lot more sense to them, and then they can see it in the world around them when they return to wherever they come from.
Now, when Tom was here once before, he said some startling statistics about the amount of oxygen, was it, that we get from the ocean?
Well, that would be ocean literacy principle number four.
Oh, okay. I'm jumping ahead. Sorry, I don't want to get ahead.
So
the ocean's one big place filled with lots of features. And what's the second one again?
It shapes the features of the land. So, you
know, it affects us. We don't think of it as affecting us here on land.
Well, and, you know, rock formations, it has to do with engineering and design. It has to do with how water cuts through things. And so, you know, it's a lot more exciting and dynamic principle than you may think at first. And it kind of reminds us that the ocean is a dynamic, you know, thing. It's not just sitting there like
and
a
lake. And it has an impact on us here.
Absolutely. Right. So, you know, from there we move into weather and climate. So the ocean influences weather and climate. And we talk to kids, you know, we zoom out. So typically when they're studying in school, they may study weather and climate from a very vocabulary perspective. So name types of precipitation, and, you know, they may get
cumulonimbus clouds.
Oh, wow, yeah. You've done well.
That's the only one I know.
We try to get them into, you know, sort of the bigger picture of these patterns and why they, you know, what role the ocean plays. What's fun for kids is rather than, you know, we take them outside and we do cloud identification and, you know, we replicate the water cycle. But what's really fun is we created a weather studio where the kids get to look at weather maps and
based on a weather studio. And what, wow! Okay.
Yeah,
so I can be weatherman down there.
Absolutely, yeah. You can be a lot of things at Exploration.
You get to be the explorer.
I can be the explorer.
What they do instead of just repeating something is they have to interpret the map. So that shows deep understanding that they've really gotten the concept. But then we move into ocean literacy principle number 4.
Okay.
And I'm going to let Tom take this one. It's that the ocean makes the earth habitable. And so go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, you know, if we didn't have an ocean, I mean, I've sailed around a lot of oceans in my youth. And
we're going to get into that in the next segment here. Yeah. Your background's fascinating.
If we didn't have an ocean, we'd be like Mars. And it would be barren, be dry. And we talk about the amount of oxygen. Mm-hmm. Scientists estimate that somewhere between 50 to 70% of all the oxygen on Earth is created by the ocean.
Wow. So here we're worrying about, and justifiably so, rainforests and other things that generate a certain amount of oxygen, take the carbon dioxide and, what is it, photosynthesis.
It is photosynthesis. Yeah, okay. No, well, a healthy ocean, a healthy planet. Okay? And so we need the oceans to stay healthy.
How does the ocean take that and turn it into oxygen?
Plankton are little plants. They're both plants and animals. Okay. And so mainly plant. And the volume, the mass, you know, the ocean covers, over two-thirds of the world. Mm-hmm. And so that mass of plankton all over the world, you know, it's deep water columns as well, produces an awful lot of oxygen. And it takes the carbon dioxide out of the air and produces oxygen back. And so every other breath you take, and anyone that's, you know, breathing, as you know, is automatic. But if you start talking about breathing, people start doing it on purpose. And so every other breath you take comes from seawater.
Wow. Say that again. Every other breath I take, one, two, comes from seawater.
Right. That's right. And without seawater, a healthy ocean. So as the climate changes, the ocean gets a little warmer. You know, plankton maybe becomes a little more populous in some places, a little less than others. All these things are having an effect on our weather.
So you're adding a little urgency to this. This isn't just for fun. This is important stuff here.
Well, I think, you know, you kind of hinted at it a little bit earlier. You talked about that Malaysian airliner that disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't found it. Well, think about it. How much money does society spend exploring the ocean versus exploring space?
Very little.
Yeah, very little. And now, you know, NASA's budget, there's two exploration agencies in America. NASA, which everyone knows about,
right.
You know, the space shuttle, that kind of stuff, the International Space Station, and NOAA, the National Oceanographic Atmospheric Administration. They're charged with exploring the ocean.
Mm.
NASA's budget is 1,800 times that of NOAA.
Wow.
So we're going to find out a lot more about outer space than we are about our own planet, which is the key to life on Earth is the ocean.
Yeah.
So had we invested more in more underwater drones, for instance, you know, maybe we would have found that jetliner a lot sooner. And so I think that's what's happening right now, and technology right now is being driven, and now these unmanned underwater drones are starting to appear, and they're now coming up with new discoveries almost every day now with the ocean. So technology is meeting a need right now for us to explore our oceans and
learn
about
them. Does that fit into what James Cameron's doing here? He seems to be committed to this in a big way.
Yeah, Jim is both, as you know, a filmmaker with Avatar and Titanic under his belt, but he's also an ocean explorer and has been for decades. So he spends half his time exploring the ocean, half the time making movies.
Yeah.
To fund it.
And didn't he just go deeper than any human has, or recently, or within?
He by himself, he built a sub for about probably $30 million was the program, I understand, from the rumor mill. And so he spent about $30 million so he could safely go from the top of the Pacific Ocean near Guam and go 7 miles straight down, spend a little time down there, collect some species of sediments and other life that was down there, and make it back up again.
7 miles you can go down into the ocean? I didn't know there was anything that deep.
50 years ago, in 1960, a couple of guys went down there in a sub, and no one had gone back for 50 years until 2012. And Jim Cameron was brave enough to put a project together, risk his own life, go down there and do it again in a one-man sub.
This is like the Marianas Trench type of area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
or
the Marianas Trench. So more people have been on the moon than have been to the bottom of the ocean.
Wow. That's crazy. Well, so now you get me, the explorer part of me, excited here. So there are frontiers left to be explored here, right in our own backyard.
Certainly. You know, you think about it, on CNN, you know, when you see these articles, you know, it's always something to do with the ocean. You know, 14-foot swordfish found, or this giant 50-foot oar fish they found off Catalina that no one ever sees, or, you know, a tsunami hits and always like, where would that come from, you know? And you know, they know that it was last year that they discovered the world's largest volcano.
What?
Yeah, last year they just found the world's largest volcano. It's buried in the Pacific Ocean.
Why wasn't this on the front page of the
It's as big as New Mexico. But they didn't know it was a volcano because it rose so slowly. They weren't sure what it was. They went down and they tested and they figured out this was a volcano. It's the world's largest.
Amazing. So why do you think? All right, so now we're going to get into some of the what has been inhibiting the exploration of the oceans. Why aren't you've certainly laid out a compelling case, and we've only gone through four of the seven principles here.
We'll work through the rest.
But it sounds like this is not just fun and cool and next to us, but it's something we need to do to survive on this planet. Why then, given that cool factor and that urgency factor, doesn't it get more funding, more exploration, and more media coverage?
I don't think I have an answer to that.
Yeah, boy,
I have some guesses. Okay, here I'll say this. All right, I think one of the things is this. Think about when you were a kid. Okay, I'm 54 years old. Right, I'm a baby. Yeah. So when I was in school, there was not a textbook that said ocean, and nothing. The ocean was virtually unexplored. You know, there only was it 5% of the oceans explored. So
what?
If you have a textbook and only 5% of the ocean's been explored, there's not a whole lot to learn about.
Yeah. So
I don't
pretty
think
short
it's,
course.
Yeah. So there's no book. So most of us grew up, learning about earth sciences and things like that. But we don't spend any time learning about the ocean because no one really thought it was important. Everyone thought it was a vast resource and we could fish it forever.
Yes.
And don't care about it. And it was like the gold rush out there, and longliners and Japanese trawlers and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so then we realized,
and it's
wow,
big we could pour whatever we wanted.
Yeah,
into
in
it.
And pollute it. And so then what happens is, the satellite age hits, and now we can monitor the ocean. We can look at it. We look at fish stocks, government regulations, great organizations like Oceana that lobby for, clean, for healthy oceans and stuff through legislation. They start looking at the ocean now through scientific means and realize, hey, this giant resource is not unlimited. And I think that is starting to set in now with people. And I think you're going to start seeing funding starting to show up, because one reason is this. They're looking to find life in outer space on moons of our solar system.
Right,
they're
going to
send probes
right
up there. Okay, and those probes are going to have to drill through ice. Well, how are they going to build those probes? They're going to build them here on Earth first. Probably maybe kids that go through the Explore Ocean programs.
Wow, you're just connecting all the dots here. No, this is a bit of field here, but you talk about things that most people don't read about. Talk about, and I forgot what they call them. You told me the name a while ago. These giant debris fields of plastic floating around in the ocean. There's 6 or 7 of these things floating around out there.
So it sounds like you're referring to the gyres, the garbage patch.
Yes, that's what they're called.
So yeah, gyres. I mean, and it's a huge problem. We, and that is ocean literacy principle number 6.
That's good. Just, okay, we have to come back and do 5.
We
but
don't
right
have to be linear here. And actually, it's a good point. Is one of the things with just studying the ocean in general, there's so much interconnectedness between these concepts, and I think that's the big thing that we hope to have kids take away is there's a domino effect in a million directions. Literally, it's like dropping a drop of water in a bucket, you can see it ripple out. So there's a huge plastics problem, and that's what you're talking about there. We're twice the size of Texas. We've got these sort of islands of trash, but
and the ocean currents pull them together.
Yeah, pull them together, exactly. In some spots, it can be as deep as 90 feet.
What? My goodness.
Yeah, and so we actually have a chemical engineering program we conducted over the summer that was called Plants to Plastics, where kids learn to make plant-based plastics that would, biodegrade much, much faster and be better for the environment. And so,
which is originally how plastics were discovered. They're carbon-based things. Mm-hmm. I actually did some work in plastics years ago with a client of mine and learned that all of these carbon chains basically came
polymers
came from plant-based materials.
In plastics, they weren't a problem. I remember the movie The Graduate, Dustin Hoffman being told, remember the tip, plastic, son, plastics. Going to plastics? Well, 50 years ago, 40 years ago, plastics weren't a problem because they really hadn't been invented. Now, after decades of plastics, they're floating around in our oceans, and in fact, there's studies there trying to figure out, where is all the plastic? Well, a lot of it sinks, and goes to the bottom and kind of forms new compounds down there. A lot of it gets ingested, unfortunately, by the fish life.
Yes.
And we eat those fish, There's a kid out there right now somewhere that's going to invent a plastic that truly dissolves, not just, but in salt water. He's going to become a billionaire that can figure out the right chemical formula to make plastics.
Okay, you hear that, kids? One of you, today we just inspired somebody. We sparked a thought here.
Yep. It's going to happen, because money and time's going to go at it, and technology may take us out of that, but meanwhile we're having to treat the symptoms.
So give me number 5. We skip principle number 5 here.
So principle number 5 is that there's a great diversity of life in ecosystems. And here we're just talking about the different types of life forms. You know, kids usually can, when we ask them, well, what kind of sea creatures do you know about, it's usually the cast of SpongeBob.
Yeah.
Right. Sharks.
I love SpongeBob.
Yeah, I have to admit, it's a fine starting point. There is some diversity with SpongeBob, sure.
Although I don't think they make squirrels under the water with helmets on or whatever.
No, they don't. But, you know, those will be our students down there someday,
yes,
too. But, you know, actually, it isn't all bad. Some of the things that kids learn, they know about the anglerfish from Finding Nemo. So, you know, we're mm-hmm. thankful for that. But, you know, we want them to think much more, you know, broadly. The largest life forms and smallest life forms on Earth are all found in the ocean. And again, the interconnectedness of those ecosystems, when you have, you know, too much of something or not enough of the other, you know, there's problems. So
I was always amazed. I lived for a while up in San Pedro, and they had the Cabrillo Museum, which was a fine but a little museum. And they talked about tide pools a lot, and you would go out and do tide pool tours. I didn't know there was so much stuff living within that zone between the land and the, mm-hmm. I guess, where the water drops off, that tide pool area, that shallow area there.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we have a touch tank at Explore Ocean, and we use that as a nice starting point. It, you know, replicates what kids can see when they venture out. But what we like to do is, you know, start from there, teach kids, and we do this in a lot of different ways, but we teach them how to see, meaning, you know, well, what mm-hmm. am I looking for? Because just like, you know, going to the tide pools or going to the ocean, people don't always
don't see anything.
They just don't know what to look for or where to look for it. But we take them to the tide pools. All of a sudden, that tide chart that looks so cumbersome and funky to, you know,
right.
if they're not surfers, all of a sudden that becomes a really interesting thing. It, you know, it drives when it's good to go visit those tide pools. But, you know, so with this fifth principle, we're really trying to have kids have a greater appreciation of the diversity
of
life.
And what's the last principle? You said there's seven?
Well,
I got one more thing to add there. You know, we talk about life in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Here's an interesting fact for you. You know that most life in the ocean bioluminesces?
What?
It creates its own light.
No.
Yeah, maybe dolphins and whales don't, but there's tons of creatures, squid and all types of creatures in the ocean, deep water creatures, they create their own light. Wendy has these really great experiments with showing kids that, you know, with bioluminescent chemicals that the kids can create and pull out of water, and we teach kids that. So they have an octopus, squid, all types of creatures bioluminesce. That was actually the inspiration for Avatar. I know when you see those creatures that float around in Avatar, that are kind of like that, and the Abyss, that Jim Cameron, because he's an ocean explorer, found creatures that bioluminesced and put them in his movies.
Unbelievable. Yeah. All right, number seven.
Okay, well, I don't think we hit number six.
Six was kind of the trash, I thought. I don't know if we delineated what it was, though. What is number six?
Well, and six is really interesting because a lot of folks fall under this when they think about their current connection with the ocean. And that's that basically that there's many gifts coming from the sea. So here we're talking about recreation, transportation, inspiration, so the medicines, the food, but, you know, even commerce. So we can actually take our ocean discussion into an economics class and talk about the ocean's role in, you know, our economy. So here, you know, we're really tackling a lot of different things, but, you know, what I like to distill it down to for kids is, you know, that it's a source of inspiration, recreation, transportation. Basically, there's many, many gifts that come from the ocean. You know, we really do need to protect it.
What does it ask in return? It's giving us all these free gifts. It just says, take care, love me here, take care of me here.
love me back.
Take care of me. Well, that's interesting. We talk about things like, you know, marine protected areas and, you know, kind of to your point of this idea of love me. Well, love me or leave me alone.
Which, yes.
Sometimes that's what it takes. That's what a marine protected area attempts to do, is to, you know, kind of create a place where if we just leave things alone, they can get better.
They can heal themselves
relatively
right.
quick. In other cases, we take kids to a little pen, and again, you know, our unique location offers us so many gifts. There's a white sea bass program where, you know, the white sea bass was overfished to, you know, a critical point. And
I didn't know that.
Well,
okay.
Yeah, as a fisherman.
Everybody, did you know the white sea bass? I didn't know that.
Okay, so I didn't either. But I learned about this. So it's pretty interesting. So this white sea bass is a really popular, you know, fish on the menu. People love to catch it.
I love sea bass.
It's
a sport fish.
Is that why I have to get Chilean sea bass all the time?
Watch out for that.
So these white sea bass, you know, and it's just such a great example for kids of different ways to restore something that's in jeopardy. The one idea is leaving it alone. So with sea bass, we could say, well, it's overfished. You know, it's at a critical point here. Maybe we make more rules and, you know, it has to be bigger or you catch fewer.
Right.
Well, down in Newport, there's actually a white sea bass pen, and the Balboa Angling Club, in connection with SeaWorld have this system where they raise these little fingerlings to about 10 inches, and about 7,000 of them a year are released. And what I like about this example is we can take kids out to the pen. They can participate in the feeding. It's volunteer run, so volunteers feed the fish. They have scuba divers who clean the tanks. But in this case, you know, it's not a leave-alone strategy. It's a very proactive strategy. So, you know, they don't want to give up sport fishing. They want to continue to enjoy this fish.
But let's find a way to sustain it.
Yeah, so what's the way to do this that's, you know, going to make it happen? And in this case, it's very proactive. The other thing that's cute is we have kids make posters because it is part of a research study, and these fish are actually chipped. So they have, they're about 3 inches long. They have little chips in their cheek. And when they are caught, you're supposed to chop their heads off and turn them into your local, you know.
Fish and wildlife or something. Yeah, right.
And then they send them down to SeaWorld. And the person who catches them gets an email that says, you know, where the fish was born and where it traveled and, you know, tracks it all the way to its mighty end. But it's a nice blend of technology and nature and, you know, elbow grease that makes this a fish that's available.
We got a couple of minutes before we're going to take a break here. Give us number seven.
Okay, so number seven is the almighty, you know, Explore-Ocean's mantra, and that's that it's that the ocean is largely unexplored. And Tom touched on this earlier. You know, we've only explored or can say we understand about 5% of the ocean.
Something so important. You've listed commerce. You've listed food. You've listed transportation, recreation, a whole bunch of other reasons there. It affects life on this planet. It affects the erosion of the earth and the atmosphere and the weather. It affects oxygen, a little thing called oxygen, and yet we haven't explored this darn thing.
Well, and you're going to get an honorary certificate of completion for your knowledge of the ocean literacy principles. Well done. But yeah, there's so much more to discover. And so we try to take all of these principles, you know, the environmental.
I want a t-shirt. That's all.
I survived the ocean literacy principles.
Yeah.
But, you know, we really want to teach them not from a, wow, that's a terrible thing, only, you know, 5%. We try to do it from an empowerment perspective. So, okay.
Opportunity rather than negativity.
Yeah. So knowing what we know, what can you do about it, and you know, where do you fit in? And with kids, I find this principle to be so inspiring because there's just so much room for them. Because, you know, at their age and, you know, in my age, we all kind of feel like, well, it's already been invented. It's already been done.
Yeah,
well, there's just so much more that
I got to go to Titan or some other solar system to find something new. We've already been to the heart of Africa. We've already been to Antarctica. We've seen the world.
Yeah, but there's just so much more for them. And, you know, and we need them. So whether it's that they're discovering new medicines or, you know, new food sources, there's something that's out there that we know it's going to be, you know, one of our kiddos.
And it might just be in the ocean right there. All right,
absolutely.
With that, let's take a quick break here, and we'll come back and find out more about Tom's background, which is absolutely fascinating here, and where this program is going, because I think that's an even bigger story. Stick with us. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors.
This is the sound of a flat-screen television hurled off a building. Now the new bike your kid wants. These are the things you could have, all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Use Energy Star light bulbs and appliances, and you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Can we talk about your family business? You know, that thing you put your whole life's blood, sweat, and tears into? Well, what happens when you retire or try and pass that business on to your children? At Succession Strategies, we can help you find the answers. We'll guide you through the unsettling process of protecting your family legacy and successfully passing your business on to the next generation, safely and securely, ensuring that it'll both survive and thrive for generations to come. So ask yourself just one question. Can I really afford to wait? Take the first step. Take our complimentary self-assessment at successionstrategies.com or call us at 714-560-9022 to set up a free consultation at your convenience. That's succession-strategies.com.
All right, we're here with the folks from Explore Ocean, and give us how that's spelled, because you don't spell it the way I would spell it here. Oh, let's put your mic up. There you go.
It's spelled ExploreOcean. Only one E in Explore.
Only one E Explore. Okay. All right. So we got that straight. And this is down at the Balboa Peninsula. It encompasses, you basically own the whole fun zone. Talk about the plans for this expansion thing, and then I'm going to work backwards and talk about how you got into this. This was originally the Nautical Museum, as I understand
it. That's right. The organization is 28 years old, nonprofit, and they originally were a nautical museum. And in 2005, they bought the property in the fun zone, and thinking they were looking for more foot traffic, and they set up their displays, but they weren't really all that well received by the community. And I think it's because it's the fun zone; it's not the history zone.
Yes, right.
And so the board, too much cotton candy.
Yeah. And not enough
The board looked at it and said, you know, if we're going to get kids down here, we got to make it interactive. So we need to change the focus. So the focus was pretty easy. The ocean, it's right there at your doorstep. And then they said, well, what's going to make us special? What's going to make us different? We're not an aquarium, so let's teach kids about the ocean from a STEM basis, science, technology, engineering, math.
And that is a point to stop and make. This isn't an aquarium where you're going to go see exhibits of fish.
No.
This isn't SeaWorld or
something. It's all hands-on. You can come in, make a mess, spill things. We have no problem. Spill up aisle three, clean up, no problem. We can do all that.
Splash zones and no fish.
And we have a traveling program too, a van. We go out to, like, you know, Children's Hospital of Orange County. We go to, you know, UCI. We go to the OC Fair. We had 21,000 kids this year go through our exhibit at the fair.
Wow.
You know, so we have a big outreach program as well over there.
So they came along and they decided, let's create an interactive, educational kind of thing about the ocean.
Right.
And where does it go from here? Because you got a couple buildings there, but mostly it's still fun zone.
Yeah, we're talking right now with the city about parking and also our entitlements. And the entitlements are where you get the city and the California Coastal Commission to sign off on approval for a new building. Mm-hmm. The building we have is an older building, and it's not quite suited for what we want to do. So we're planning for the future already. So we're going to secure our entitlements. That'll take a couple years by the time you wind your way through everybody, especially the California Coastal Commission,
right?
Who, by the way, were their number one funded nonprofit in the state of California serving youth. So that's a good thing.
That's a good starting point. All right.
Yeah, and the parking as well. We're talking to the city about building a parking structure there in the village, which all the village people want. So that's good.
If for those who haven't been down there, parking's a nightmare, I'm sorry to say. So I'm not trying to be negative, but parking is difficult.
Yeah, it's like Mark Twain said, no one goes there anymore, it's too crowded. And that's the Balboa Village, you know, it's like that. You know, you think you don't want to go there, but 2 million people would differ with you.
Yeah. You know? All right, so you've got this giant footprint that's been around forever. Does the fun zone go away and turn into something bigger? Does the fun zone get incorporated into this project?
Stays right there. You know, the Ferris wheel, we're going to keep we love the Ferris wheel. It's right on the boardwalk. You know, the nonprofit, if for people that go down there, the nonprofit owns those rides on the boardwalk. They pay rent, and the rent goes to the nonprofit. Which
so you're
then,
helping.
In turn, uses it for the programs.
Okay. You know,
so it's very healthy. And also the marina down there as well, out front, that's our marina. And so we're using those boats. We have a new submarine ride down there.
Well, that's what I was trying to tee
our
up
new
here.
Sub?
Let's talk about that, because what you showed me the proposed plans, and I don't know if there's top secret at this point. You can talk about them, but if you go into commissions and hearings, they must be out in the open. You've got a huge. You're going to take down what were these kind of smaller single story buildings and build a multi story big building that'll not only house more. What would we say? Interactive. Are the exhibits interactive displays, interactive stations? What's the verbiage I use there?
Yeah, very interactive learning theaters would be part of it. A top floor, 18,000 square foot community center on top of the building, solar panel, LEED certified silver, perhaps gold. Cool. We actually would love to make it a living building if we could. That's the highest potential standard.
Cool.
Low carbon footprint, recyclable materials. So from that standpoint, we'd be very, very environmentally friendly.
But when I go there again, it's something to get your hands on. Mm-hmm. It's sort of, I think of, and maybe this is a bad analogy, but the Discovery Center sort of has those kind of interactive exhibits for kids, not about oceans, but about other sorts of science and technology principles.
But also classroom as well on top of that. So not just the ticketed side of the equation, but a floating classroom. We have that in mind as well to push the classrooms out on the waterfront out there. And that would be on a barge that could actually travel between Newport Beach, Catalina Island, Los Angeles Harbor. It'd be the only one of its kind anywhere in the world.
And that's what I think I'm hearing is different about you guys. This isn't a go there and see it and leave, pay your ticket, take the e-ride, go through all the exhibits, and then go home and say, oh, that was interesting. Someday I'll help the ocean. This is a way to get people involved. Mm-hmm. You're taking them to Catalina. You're taking them underwater in a submarine. You're taking them out to Pirate's Cove. You're taking them places. It's almost like a jumping off point to get into the ocean. You can go there and understand some of the principles and exhibits and get your hands dirty and take classes and do all that. Yes, we get that. But what excites me is that I can actually get into a boat and go somewhere or go under the sea or go someplace. I can get out into the ocean as well from you.
Well, absolutely. And the other thing is, you know, we know kids aren't the only ones who like field trips. So these
excursions, that's what I'm trying to get at here.
No,
I want to go to field trips.
You're right on this. I mean, you know, you're exactly mission aligned with us. One of the things that we do, you know, and just everything we do, whether it's a, you know, a 10-minute Science Saturday program, we have free activities for the public from noon to 3 on Saturdays, and we do quick little 10-minute activities. So whether it's a 10-minute program or a 10-month program in a school, we always take this approach of investigate, innovate, and communicate. So first we want them to investigate and understand, but then, you know, where's their mark? Where can they innovate and create their own, you know, kind of thinking about this concept? And then turning around and communicating it. We want to make sure kids have a voice and can turn around and you know, speak.
That's our mantra here. We're trying to give voice to businesses and all sorts of stories that otherwise don't have a voice.
Absolutely. So on those excursions, we definitely give those kinds of activities where kids have something to talk about.
And in those businesses that, you know, that sponsor your station, they're always looking for, you know, kids that can have critical thinking skills. That's what we're attempting to do, inspire kids, especially at-risk kids. We didn't talk about that too much, but first day of school for the Orangewood was to come to Academy, was to come to Explore Ocean. And that's where a lot of foster kids, about 120 foster kids, ninth graders, all showed up on day one at our place. And they've done it now 2 years in a row.
Well, for those who've listened to these programs before, you know that's a subject near and dear to my heart. I adopted a daughter, not out of Orangewood, but out of a similar facility up in Los Angeles. She was an abandoned child, and we adopted her at age 11. She's from Mexico, and it's been just the greatest thing in our life here. It hasn't always been easy, but it's been an incredible journey for us. And there are 500,000 kids in foster care right now, half of whom will never go home to anybody.
Aww.
We're just going to turn them out in the streets at 18 like they got out of prison, give them a new suit of clothes and say good luck, and guess what? They're going to fail and fall into drugs and crime and all sorts of things.
You know what Wendy's hoping we can do here, I think I'll speak a little for you, but if we can get a kid young enough in the program and they stick with it for, you know, 5-10 years, it's a way to build their resume to get into college. And so these foster kids, a lot of them qualify for financial aid. They just don't apply.
Right.
So, but if they see themselves in a different light, they apply. They get into school. They come out. They get a degree in a field that pays well. You know what the top earning job last year was out of college, just a 4-year college?
It wasn't radio.
No, it wasn't radio, that's for sure. But it was a petroleum engineer.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
4-year degree, petroleum engineer, starting salary, $120,000 a year.
Wow. Well, and you've hit it. You know, there's so many kids. Foster care is one extreme example, but even at-risk kids who don't have any imagination. They can't see a future. All they've seen is a terrible past. Mm-hmm. And a lot of cases, they blame themselves. It must be my fault my parents beat me. It must be my fault my parents abandoned me. And I'm going to get choked up here. But, you know, that's so they don't have a lot of self-worth, and they don't see any path forward. They don't see any way out of these things. So what you're doing is giving them something to shoot for.
You know, Wendy used her USC, when she got her doctorate in education from USC, she used her connection over at the Wrigley Center. Mm-hmm. She brought some kids out, foster kids out.
This is over on Catalina.
On Catalina to the USC Wrigley Center. And these kids are like 16, maybe 17. And they're looking at kids that are like 18, 19. They're only a couple years difference, mm-hmm. you know. And they're looking at them going, wait a minute, if they can do it, I can do it.
Yes, right.
And that's a big eye-opener.
Big eye-opener. To see that there is a world around you and that I can do something, to believe, mm-hmm. to have hope and to have belief here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, so you're giving kids hope and belief, and you're saving the planet, and you're helping populate the fish, and you're doing all sorts of... Is there any task too big that you can't tackle here?
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy, that one!
Boy, I don't know. You know, we're pretty ambitious. You know,
that's the hardest
you know,
question.
We know who we are. We know who we're not. You know, and we're just building the programs now. And you see a lot of us in the media, the papers. We have a lot of we have an adult lecture series. We haven't really talked about that.
Oh,
we have an adult lecture series that happens at Explore. We get world renowned speakers that come in from all over the place, talk about topics, whether it be the diving on the Titanic or free diving or you name it. searching.
To,
yeah,
I went to one, and I thought it was a topic that, you know, I'm kind of a in Orange County. I'm an anomaly. I'm kind of a liberal leftover hippie kind of thing here. And you were talking about sustainable seafood.
Yeah,
and that's a topic that's near and dear to a lot. I love seafood. I'm sorry to say, Mr. and Mrs. Fish out there, I love love to eat fish. And I'm very concerned about the sustainability of our seafood stock out there, pollution, overfishing, and you're going to tell me 10 other reasons probably as well, but those are the two that come into my mind here. And you were talking about how even within, wasn't somebody trying to raise some sort of shellfish or something in Newport Harbor?
Catalina.
Yeah, Catalina Sea Ranch. They're going to grow filter feeders, basically mussels, Mediterranean mussels, and they want to plant a farm of a couple hundred acres out in the ocean off Huntington Beach.
How amazing.
You know, and just use the natural ocean water to do it. And filter feeders are great farm-raised, you know, type creatures. You know, there's, and you know that half the seafood that you eat right now in America is farm-raised. Used to be wild-caught, now it's farm-raised.
I had no idea, but that explains why. When I lived in San Peter, the the fishing fleets had basically disappeared. And a lot of that was because of foreign competition, foreign trawlers, and doing these big, what do they have, these nets where they drag and haul everything off, including the stuff that they shouldn't be killing here.
Yeah, we bring awareness to that issue. You know, we're not a lobbying organization, but we're educating, you know, people about the situation. Gill nets, for instance.
Yes,
you know, California, you know, just banned shark finning, shark fin soup. That's going to have an impact, you know, because when the sharks go away,
sorry for all our Asian listeners here, but no point for shark fin soup anymore.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a number of things. Again, science is, again, catching up a little bit now to what was just formerly the ocean was the Wild West show, and now I think people are realizing that it's a resource and it needs to be managed to preserve in areas and have, like we talked about, the marine no-take areas where fish, pregnant fish, can go and breed and have get a break, you know. And so there's a lot of good things that are starting to happen now around the ocean. So we feel we're on a nice trajectory.
So you're kind of a, what would we say, you're at the crux of this conversation, you're at the center of this conversation, and your point isn't to push one point or another, but simply to get people into the ocean and get them aware of what's out there and what's happening and how important it is, and show them ways that they can actually get involved and get their hands dirty, maybe here.
Get their hands wet.
Get their hands wet. I'm sorry.
All walks of life, you know. And, you know, Wendy, you know, when we talk about all walks of life, we have, you know, large Spanish-speaking population here in Orange County. Wendy, she speaks fluent Spanish. So she can go and talk to the kids, the educators, and, you know, take them on. Say a couple things for us there, Wendy.
Oh, that's...
¿Dónde está? How about reaching out to other communities? We have the largest Vietnamese-speaking community here outside of Vietnam.
Yeah.
We have large Cambodian community in Long Beach. We have large Indian community in Los Alamitos and other places here. Talk about some of those things, because I sometimes worry that in other cultures, they haven't pushed this idea of conservation, care for resource stuff, you know, and understandably, these are poor countries. They're trying to stay alive. They're not worrying about what happens to the rainforest. They're not worrying about what happens to creatures. They're just trying to survive here. But as we try and realize that these things are interconnected, we can't lose oceans, we can't lose species without having some impact on other species and impact on all of us. How do you reach out to these other communities that may or may not have a sensitivity to that, or may not have a cultural history like we've tried to develop here of caring for these things?
Well, you know,
trying to be politically sensitive about it, but I just wondered that some you know, the Chinese have been under attack in many areas because now they're a world power. But with that comes world responsibilities. You can't just pollute the heck out of everything here, and the pollution just doesn't stay there anymore. It's spreading around the world. So they're, in many ways, they're having to step up and say, okay, we're going to be more ecologically conscious, not just to keep our people alive, but to keep the whole planet alive.
Well, the best thing that we can do, you know, and we can give information out and, you know, invite folks, you know, of all walks of, you know, all walks of life to our lecture series and our special events. But the very best thing we can do to really move the needle on change is to go for the kids. They're the future, and they can upwards manage their parents. So, you know, we've had our ecotech program and our bioplastics program and our, you know, our, as I mentioned before, that chemical engineering program. In one of the sessions, the kids, you know, saw this really short video about the plastics problem. And, you know, the next thing you know, I didn't even notice some of the plastics that I was using. My daughter was calling me out on it.
Yeah,
I'm not allowed to use straws anymore. And you know, it really does. They're impressionable. And if we use that opportunity in the right way, we can have the kids be advocates, you know, first with themselves and
so
then to
all
their
these
parents.
Kids, no matter what their cultural background, are all thrown into the California school system here. And you then reach out to the schools. How do you reach out to the schools? How do people, if a teacher listening, if there's a school administrator listening, how do they take advantage of your programs?
Well, some of them, you know, the best thing that's happened to us has been the word of mouth. Our first year, so really in January of 2013, we launched a new educational agenda. This is the, We launched a new educational agenda.
That was one of the seafood sea cans we were eating.
That's right. And, you know, we started by just, you know, kind of calling on teachers that we knew, marine science folks, invited them down. And the word of mouth was the best thing. I mean, there was nothing better than a teacher testimonial. And as they talked amongst themselves, the word spread. Now we're being a lot more proactive because we heard several times we were the best kept secret. Now we want to get off being a secret. So we do have folks who go out to schools and tell teachers about our programs. We also participate in large scale science events.
You really, as Tom said, you're reaching out to not just the, what should we say, affluent schools, affluent communities along the beach where you would think there'd be a lot of interest in this subject. You're going after kids that have probably never even been to the ocean, even though they're 5-10 miles away from it.
The majority of our visitors, our schools that visit are from, you know, like you said, even 8 miles away, but the kids have never been to the ocean before. Something as simple as being able to take their shoes off and stand in the sand for the first time is a game changer.
I'll bet. Wow. All right. I'm trying to take all this in. You guys are doing a lot. So you must have, what, 500 people, staff there and 1,000 volunteers? I mean, you must have just a million people working with you right now.
Not yet. No, we're building our volunteer force up right now. And we have a full-time, maybe 10 or so, with about 15 part-timers down there. And we're building our volunteer force up. We have a group. Dr. Don Wise is leading our volunteer fundraising. With the Newport Beach Men's Lunch Club is formed on their own organically. They've approached us. You know, a year and a half ago, we were making all the phone calls outward, word of mouth that Wendy's talking about. Now we're starting to get people calling us. We go out to these events. People are showing up saying, hey, you know, you're really different than the aquariums and some of the other ocean-based nonprofits. I really like what you're doing. The idea of give kids skills to get into college, to kind of break that cycle. So there's one day that foster kid that decides to go to college and get education becomes a contributor to society, as opposed to falling back and being a gang member or something else bad, you know?
Right.
So things like, examples like that, you know, and that's something that people see that they go, I get it. It's kids, environment, education. It's all combined. We're, you know, for philanthropists out there, it's an easy sell.
How do you make science, technology, and what's the other one, math?
Engineering.
Yeah.
Sexy again here. It seems like it's not sexy for most kids. Maybe computer sciences, but
you build
beyond that.
underwater robots.
You build stuff.
So talk about underwater robots. That's why you do 3D printers and some other crazy stuff like you mentioned earlier.
One of my big agendas when I came on board at Exploration was to get an underwater robotics program going here. And we took a kit that's from the Office of Naval Research, and we scaled it. You know, typically kids in schools like Harvard and Princeton and Yale use these kits to build a robot for annual competitions.
Right.
We scaled it down to where third graders can make them.
So maybe I can make it. Okay. Right. You're in.
I am sure you can. We got so much attention for our work with robotics because it really isn't very prominent out here on the, you know, on the West Coast and in Orange County. But we learned that folks are really hungry for all kinds of robotics programs. So we also have a computer programming. We've mashed art and robotics. Students are creating, you know, pieces that move with motion sensors and things like that. So we've kind of blended our ocean perspective with this whole maker movement. I'm not sure if that's something that's, you know, ubiquitous yet, but this idea of giving kids time, tools, and space to create. And it's still mission-oriented.
Have you ever reached out to, I'm thinking of like, what is it, the National Association of Manufacturers and some of the others, because manufacturing here, and they're talking about the same challenge. How do we make manufacturing sexy? There are, by recent counts, said there's over 600,000 unfilled skilled machinists mm-hmm. and CAD operators and people like the average yeah. welder is 60 years of age.
Wow.
These
yeah.
are people that make $75,000 a year. These are skilled yeah. factory workers, not just hourly, you know, assembly line workers. And they can't find people to do this because it's not sexy. Kids picture going onto a factory as an awful, evil thing. Let it go to China.
Well, we're grooming them. We have, you know, workshops teaching kids how to solder, and they make little mini robots that light mm-hmm. up and games and things like that. But it's really, again, that time, tools, and space to create. I think so much of the curriculum they're exposed to is very kit-based, like complete yeah. this thing. We give them the open-endedness to innovate, which makes it a lot more sexy.
So I'm going to throw that out to you. Maybe I'll put you in touch with the Institute for Supply Management. They work with the Commerce Department and sponsor this show.
Thank you.
And maybe this could be a way to make making stuff sexy, because you're doing it with oceans and robots and not mm-hmm. just necessarily yeah. a machine that's going to make a part that, I don't know, fits in somewhere.
You know, companies like Boeing and Lockheed Martin, if you go on their website, mm-hmm. you know, especially Lockheed Martin, they have a whole thing on 3D printing. They're using 3D printing to manufacture aircraft parts.
I know,
it's going to revolutionize manufacturing. So a child that gets involved with 3D printing with Explore Ocean goes through the programs, has some good experience. They roll out of college, and the guy from Lockheed Martin, the lady from Lockheed Martin says, hey, so what'd you build during school? I did 3D printing. You got a job.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
And, you know, and Elon Musk that runs SpaceX says right. the same. He goes, so I get all these resumes from all these kids, Harvard, Yale, UCLA, wherever. Because I don't really care. I look and see, what did you build as a kid?
Yes.
And right. if you built stuff, I'm going to hire you versus the kid with the, you know, the manufactured resume and the 4-point and all that kind of stuff. I'll hire the one that built stuff as a kid.
That's what Steven Spielberg did mm-hmm. in a different way. He made home movies and then went to USC and started making student films, and that's what propelled him into his first gigs here.
So that hands-on experience, I think, that drives home the learning, and it makes innovation. Innovation is what America's built on.
You're just trying to trick us to take care about the ocean. You're trying to get us all into this science-technology thing. Isn't this just a trick to get us all to love the ocean?
You know, it's funny. You know, Bob Ballard, the guy that discovered the Titanic, the scientist that discovered it, he's a world-famous ocean explorer. He's probably discovered more ocean species than anybody on the planet. He said, you know, people, they care about the ocean, but they care more about educating their kids, mm-hmm. you know. And so, you know, and we learned that from Bob. And we said, okay, we get it. And we're not a strictly conservation group with the ocean. I want people to get that.
You're not an aquatic version of tree huggers here.
No. You know, because I think most people think the ocean, it's out there.
Right.
And for those lucky enough to get on an airplane, they fly over it at 7 miles above,
right.
which is, by the way, the deepest the ocean is, the same number. But they don't really look at it. So
no.
I think it's out there. And so what we try to do is bring it home and make it personal and make
very,
it understand it. That,
very
you know,
clever.
And if you do that, I think people take a genuine love of the ocean. And from there, if you can build the skills to get a career, hey, that's a good deal.
So much the better.
And all these organizations that are out trying to lobby Congress, wouldn't it be great if all of Congress was ocean literate? How
yes.
easy would that be?
Yes.
To say, let's stop doing a few of these things we've been doing and make the ocean a healthy place again. And the ocean can recover very quickly if it's given a chance.
Do we need another superstar like Jacques Cousteau to come along and inspire people?
You know, there's some projects out there that are like that might do that. There's one over there in Europe right now called Sea Orbiter. And these people are building a floating classroom that's going to go in these gyres we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to go around the ocean, exploring the ocean 24/7. And we actually had the people come out from Houston, Texas. The NASA people are doing that. And that might end up being a new Jacques Cousteau-level interest to get people back interested in the ocean again.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing that's going to get people interested in the ocean is that they're going to start designing probes to go to these other moons of other planets.
Mm-hmm.
And if they find life...
I know they're talking about Titan and some
yeah,
of the other.
Yeah, they're going to have a probe that's going to drill through layers of ice. They're going to find, whether it be microbes or whatever they find, and I believe that they'll find it. And when they do, I think it'll give people a new sense of their place in the universe.
But I think also, unlike the, you know, Jacques Cousteau is one man with many stories, we're hoping to create many people with, you know, one or more stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
and
that's what we're trying to do.
Exactly.
You know, it's no longer about one giant story that inspires everybody. It's lots of, it's a overwhelming body of interesting individual stories.
Yeah, we value all the kids that come down there. You know, we go out to the Balboa Pier and we throw these crab nets off, right? And there's maybe 20 kids. And some kids are real quiet. They're not sure what's going on. And we can do it because you don't need a license to fish off up here in California. Mm-hmm. And they put some chicken in there. They throw it over, wait about 10 minutes, and they pull it up with crabs. You got 20 kids. And then sometimes the quietest kids become the most vocal. You know, right? And the most... because they get really excited. So you see these kids, I mean, I hate to say it, coming out of their shell. Yeah. You know, okay? Right. And they love it. And they've never... And they see a crab in nature, not in an aquarium somewhere, but it's in nature. They pick it up and they get these huge crabs. You know, they're like, you know, foot across. And they're like, what's that? We throw them back and catch them the next day, you know? But just simple things like that, I think, can involve the general public. And that's what we're about.
You got me inspired here. I'd love to find ways to tell your story more and share this story with others. How can people get in touch with you if they want to learn more?
You can go to our website at exploreocean.org
with money.
First E, that's it, yeah. Our phone number is 949-675-8915. We're on Facebook and all the social media pages. And, of course, they're always welcome to come down and take a tour of the facility. We have these teacher appreciation days for free. We do 4 a year. So if teachers are interested, give us a call. We'll let you know when our next swing. We'll give you an entire preview of what a field trip would look like to Explore Ocean for free, including lunch.
Amazing. And another great time is, again, on Saturdays when we have our Science Saturday time between noon and 3, but we offer free activities to the public, and it's just a fun way to really get to know who we are.
And I would be remiss if I didn't give Tom 2 minutes here to tell his story. I mean, this is a guy who's done some amazing things. What did you do before this?
Well, I retired after 27 years in the institutional bond business. But the way I got to Explore Ocean, I think that's what you're hinting at, was Roy Disney was a very good friend of mine. You know, Roy Edward Disney was a good friend of mine. We made a movie together called Morning Light back in 2008. And he and I were talking with Leslie, his wife. We said, we need to make a fundraiser for a local organization here in Orange County. And Roy's like, who should it be with? And I go, I don't know. They got this nautical museum down the street. Let's just call them up. So I called them up and said, hey, we're going to do a fundraiser for you with the Disney Corp behind it. And they're like, yeah, right. We go, no, we're really going to do it.
Really?
So we did it. And it was the largest fundraiser in the history of the organization. And then I kind of forgot about it for a while. And then the board members started percolating on, hey, we need to get away from the history part and go to the ocean.
Yeah.
So I got involved, and we kind of redid the bylaws and went through it and hired some charrette studies to really lead us down the path of creating a much more vibrant living organization, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's how I got involved. And, you know, I grew up as a kid sailing. I sailed around the world. I was on the Olympic team and sailing back in my 20s. So the ocean has always been a big part of my life. I've lived on, you know, atolls in the South Pacific by myself for a few weeks and scuba dived down there. Okay. I had a great time doing it. So for me, this is just returning back to what I did,
returning to the sea, salmon coming home.
Education's always been a big part of my life. When I was 18, I was elected the student member of the Los Angeles City School Board back in the late 70s. And so, you know, for now, it's like the ocean, education. So I'm just coming back to what I did 30 years later. Well, and putting together a cultural institution that's first class right here in Orange County. And with Dr. Wendy Marshall here, we're just having a great time. We're having a lot of fun doing it, and we're making a lot of progress. And I want to thank you for having us on the show today.
Well, thank you for coming down and sharing this. We hope you'll come back many times. And as we always said, the whole purpose of this show is to point out the most amazing thought leaders, to bring them to your attention, people doing the most amazing things right here in your own backyard. Like Explore Ocean. Thanks so much. Tune in again. You've been listening to OC Talk Radio, Orange County's only community radio station.